I started posting on Instagram multiple times a day. We only had one bottle of soap, so I had to think of lots of different ways to talk about it. Featuring the community, I started sending hundreds of bottles to anyone I knew who had a social influence and asking them to try it with a handwritten note. There was no questions of like, will you talk about this? Because we couldn't pay them to talk about it. So that seemed really unfair, and kind of greasy. But if it was like, hey, if you like this, let me know what you think. You know, like if you don't like it, let me know what you think. There's handwritten notes on a white piece of paper. We didn't even buy any cool inserts or anything like that. Everything was from UI and just generic packaging. And almost every single person who received it started to talk about it online. They started to post about it on Facebook. They started to post about it on Instagram. The thing about the bathroom is that it is the worst lit room in your home. Nobody wants to show their naked kid, right? Is the worst Instagram direct to consumer company to start. Don't start a soap company if you want to sell direct to consumer. The most expensive thing you could ship for the least price point. Like, we have zero business
Oh, heavy.
acumen, and that is very clear here. Like, we did not think this through. But people were so excited, and it touched something in them, and that's how it started.
Andrea Faulkner Williams partnered with her husband Brian Williams to create a line of bath products for children. In just a few years, their company, Tubby Todd Bath Co., has become famous for great products and for bringing a sense of fun into a daily chore for young families. Their slogan, "Good, Clean, Fun," is a realistic capture of what they do. As marketers, we believe the best brands are the ones that are based upon and build community. Andrea and Brian have done exactly that. They have 270,000 followers on Instagram, 100,000 followers on Facebook, and even a private Facebook group called Tubby Todd Mamas with 20,000 members. In this episode of What I Wish I Knew with Mike Irwin and Simon Daw, Andrea and Brian share their lessons of how they built their brand while also raising a family with four kids. Theirs is really a story of faith, family, and figuring things out. Andrea and Brian, welcome to What I Wish I Knew.
Absolutely. We're excited to be here, kind of a little bit flattered, to be honest.
Well,
Yes,
thank
thank
you.
you for having us.
Well, so tell us, give us a little bit of background. I mean, obviously we'll talk a lot about Tubby Todd and the brand and, you know, how you built community, but give us a little bit of background on Andrea and Brian, where you came from and how did you get to this point?
I'll let you tackle that one, Andrea.
Okay, yeah. So I was raised here in San Diego. And I was one of five. My parents started multiple businesses together. So I was raised in a home of entrepreneurs. There was no dream that was silly. Nothing was too big as far as thinking went. And so I always knew that I wanted to not start a business. I wanted to grow up and have six kids. That's all I wanted. But I didn't want to homeschool six kids. So I always tell people, I'm like, I don't know if we would have had four kids if I knew there was going to be a pandemic, but we have four kids now. We don't have six. But I always knew that I wanted to be with someone, that I wanted a partner who was interested in doing things a little bit unconventionally when it came to supporting our family, because any other way just seemed kind of like taking the easy route out. I was like, why would anyone go become a dentist or a doctor when you could start your own business and risk it all? Now I see why people become dentists and doctors. That is a great idea, and more people should do that. That is so smart. Brian and I met in Utah. I was at Brigham Young. He had graduated from college, and we were set up by my sister. And we went on our first
Kind of.
date.
I don't want to give her all the credit for
Oh, okay, yeah. So
that.
we're still working through some family things there. So
I
we
mean,
went
she was
on
a
our
part of
first,
it, absolutely.
yeah, we went on our first date, and Brian was late. I haven't said that in a long time, but I feel like I should bring that up, which was a really good indication of how things were going to go moving forward. He was late, but he was worth the wait. And when he came to pick me up, we went on a drive, and he took me to a house that he was interested in purchasing and remodeling. And we talked about on our first date how it'd be really cool to work with your spouse, and how we always how both of us had had ideas of, oh yeah, like when we grow up, we envision working with our, we've always envisioned working with our significant other. And that's how it started.
Yeah, I didn't come from a family of entrepreneurs. My parents, you know, they both work. My mom taught piano in the home, so I guess that's some sort of entrepreneurship. But my dad worked for pharmaceutical companies. And, but I think in my upbringing, what was instilled in me was just hard work. Just you work hard and you put in the time, you put in the effort, and that's how you'll put food on the table, provide for your family. And so I really value, these life lessons that, you know, my parents taught me along the way. From a young age, I started mowing lawns, and my dad would drive me to, you know, the houses. He'd wait for me patiently outside as I would just buzz through these yards as fast as I possibly could. And then he'd send me back to go tidy up some corners that I'd missed. And that was kind of a little bit of my upbringing. We'd spend time out in the garden pulling weeds. And, but yeah, I grew up, really valuing that idea of hard work. And then I think because I'd done so much lawn mowing through college, I'd paid my way through college by washing windows. I'd seen how much more fruitful it was to be self-employed, that I had a hard time maybe being a good employee because I just, maybe the reward wasn't always the same. And so there was that desire to want to start something. And, you know, I definitely partnered up with somebody who also has drive. She sells herself of not being a business owner. She tells stories all the time about her being a kid, hustling the neighborhood kids, setting up kid camps, and
taking advantage of my upper middle class upbringing, getting all those moms to pay me a hefty payment for those babysitting camps.
But both of our minds just kind of work that way, right?
Tell us a little bit. So you get together, you have a family, and, you know, Brian, you know, our paths crossed, you know, in other businesses and stuff like that, which was terrific. But then how did you decide that, okay, you're really going to actually do this? And what was kind of the impetus for it?
You know, I wish I had like this completely pure altruistic motive behind Tubby Todd, that it was completely to create the world's best childcare products. And while, you know, that is part of our DNA, that we really do believe that we've created just top-notch, first-class products, a large part of it was based on the drive to provide for our family.
But yeah, that idea, yeah, sorry, Brian.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
I was thinking the idea, though, and you talked about ambition, or I get the feeling, Andrea, you were talking about the ambition in you, and Brian, you're talking about the hard work, and there's a, you know, pardon the pun, but there's a marriage made in heaven there, isn't there? So how did the inspiration to get into that kind of, I guess, category and product and bring it all together come about?
Absolutely. I think that started a little ways back, and I'll probably share a little bit more here than you want, but so I graduated college during that, like, the 2008 recession time frame. And so I was working for Johnson & Johnson, kind of following in my dad's footsteps, doing the pharmaceutical route. And I got laid off with thousands of other people on a really fun conference call. Oh. And I really have nothing bad to say about Johnson & Johnson. They were very fair to us and gave us a fair shake, and gave us a nice severance package. And I left that experience, though, really wanting to work in a small business environment and or start my own thing. And so that kind of set in motion a few different things. One, I knew that I didn't know enough to go off right away. I needed to learn more myself before starting something. And so I went down a few different paths. One of the paths that I'd gone down was working with a friend and his uncle who had started a company. And it was kind of like a Groupon type company. We had a website, it was called citydeals.com. We sold product, we sold services, all based around discounts and like a getting best bang for your buck sort of thing. And it was at my time there that I really saw the value of product and how product can scale and how you can market and really the genius behind product. Both of you guys have worked at WD-40. You see what amazing company that they've built and have been able to scale. And I kind of got a little glimpse at that, that, you know, rather than just putting in my own sweat and tears, like through service, like I had done before, washing windows, mowing lawns, you can multiply. And so that really caught my attention and got me excited, which kind of, and so when City Deals came to an end, I saw this opportunity to go kind of learn how to create products and be a, and that's where I met you, Mike, is working at this manufacturer. And so, which was pretty deliberate. I wanted to learn that process of putting products together so that ultimately we would be able to kind of do something on our own with it.
Fantastic.
I think that one thing that was, you know, you get married and like the world's your oyster and we were both young. And I mean, growing up, I didn't know people who had lost jobs. You know, people stayed at a job for 20, 30 years. Companies didn't lay people off like they do now, you know? And, you know, it was right when I was graduating from college where we got married and Brian, you know, had a career change and then we had our first baby. And it just felt like, you know, we were in the middle of a recession. And although we were always financially fine and we were progressing, I felt like we were spinning our wheels in a lot of ways. And when we would get an idea, we had an idea to do headphones at one point. We were gonna make cool headphones and sell them. And then one point we had an idea to do a window washing company or a cleaning service company or develop camping gear. And we investigated all of those ideas together, created logos and put together business plans. And then Brian's talking about this marketing company he started. He started the marketing company and then I helped run it. This is at that time we had one little girl and, I was also writing a book from home. And so, and then I worked in social media from home. Anyways, all of these things kind of in me built like this frustration, that ended up turning into a good fire that like when we finally had a product to sell, it was kind of like, you know, a little thoroughbred at the gate. I was ready to just go, right? And so I think a lot of times looking back, what I wish I would have known was working hard at these individual jobs or business ideas, we'd run into a wall and then they'd kind of fall apart. And then we felt like we were picking ourselves up and starting over again. And I always thought there was a problem with us, with me or with what we were doing, but really it just wasn't a fit yet. And all of those experiences were building until we had the momentum and the fire and the energy. And like Brian said, the knowledge to go after Tubby Todd. And so I'm really grateful for those years. I don't ever want to do them again. It was horrible. I'd rather work hard and have like a plan of what we're doing. I hated the feeling of not knowing where our life was heading. you know, and I felt all this energy, and so did Brian inside of us. We're super motivated and we just didn't know where to put it. And we kept trying to put it places and then it would crumble, you know? So, yeah.
So Andrew, I want to ask you about that. Cause I, you know, you hit on something, which is an interesting point. So there's, you know, in the business, in marketing, right, there's sort of a market fit where you, if you come up with an idea, you've got to find where it fits within, you know, consumers and that kind of thing. But I think you hit on something else, which is also sort of like, fit for us, like as fit for our capabilities or our interests or resources or whatever. Did you see both sides of that then?
Yeah. So, you know, Brian, we went to this outdoor retailer show when we were working on tents, and Brian and I were walking around and we're like, we are not cool enough to start a camping company. Like, first off, Brian's like a legit outdoorsman, but I really love hotels. And second off, like we wanted to have kids and like go to their soccer games and watch Netflix together at night. Like we didn't want to be out promoting products with, you know, like cool young hip people. That wasn't something that was a fit for our personalities. So the day that Brian came home from work, he had had a really bad day at work and both of us just felt frustrated. Like I said, we had one child and he came home. He's like, we're going to start a soap company for children because we have a family and that's what we love. We love family and we're going to call it Tubby Tot. And I was like, hell yeah, we are. Like, I just remember that moment, me sitting on the couch and like the experience of being like, yeah, that's what we like. We like family. We're big family dorks. We want to have a big minivan full of kids. This is perfect. And we want to take care of them. Like no one is more committed to family than Brian. Like he, no one is. And so for him to come home and say that, I was just like, this is perfect. And then that started us on our journey of developing the perfect products for our family. In that time, our second son Walker was born and he had eczema. So we had actually developed a product, a wash, and it was great with our little girl. But when Walker was born, we used it on Walker, his skin would flare up. It was an all organic, like a Castile soap, but it was too dry. It stripped his skin of moisture. And that's when we learned about skin sensitivities, kids who are prone to eczema and psoriasis and all of these things that need more hydration through their wash. And that's when we're like, no, this wash, if we're going to sell it, it's going to be the best wash that takes care of everything in our home. That's when we'll put our name on it. Right. And so that's kind of like what you say, Mike, like it has to be the right time in the market, but it's got to be the right time for you and the right product. Right.
That's fascinating. So then to be fair though, right. I mean, a lot of companies or a lot of people would say, hey, we're going to create the world's best product in whatever. It could be suntan lotion. It could be, you know, it could be baseball bats. Right. What is it you think, and I don't know, you know, anything about your category, except that, you know, your products are extraordinary and that kind of thing, but why do you think, you know, so a good product is a good place to start, but why do you think that it's worked for you? Why do you think that, consumers are drawn to what you've created?
I think that's, I mean, I'm going to kind of give the same answer, maybe in a different light though. I think the consumer this day and age is very smart. You can no longer trick the consumer. We're all too close. Social media is there. If you sell a bad product, reviews are going to fly. People are going to comment on Instagram. And we knew this. We knew we had to build and pack this product full of value. So we were trying to build a product that kind of solved a couple things for us. One, you know, we wanted to build a product that was good on sensitive skin. We wanted to build a product that was hydrating. We wanted to build a product that smelled good. We wanted to, so that the, like the user experience, right? We wanted a great user experience. We wanted to pack that user experience full of value that just couldn't be missed. And I think large in part, that's one of the legs. That's one of the legs of the stool that keep us propped up, is that people really like the product. There's 10,000, 12,000 reviews now of people raving about our product. And a few years ago, we kind of bet on ourselves. So we're chugging along as a company. We aren't really making any money. For us personally, we have a handful of employees that we're paying. We were a little bit frustrated that we're a few years into this, revenue's coming in, but not enough to like pay ourselves, not enough to like make it really worth our while. It's growing. And so, you know, we're reinvesting back into the company, which is all obviously part of the process. But we bet on the product, we bet on our, on we believed in the product, right? So what we did in order to kind of like adjust some levers and make the make this whole company kind of worth the while, we decided to slow our shipping rate down, slow our freight down. In a world of Amazon Prime, next day air shipping, we go against the grain, we slow our shipping down. Wow. And we bet on our product. And guess what? We got one or two chirps from literally, you know, we're getting thousands of orders coming in a month. And literally, I think maybe one person, two people kind of chirped up. And from time to time, you know, we'll get a person saying, "You're shipping so slow." We know it is. We hope to fix it soon too. We really want to. Like, we don't want to just leave it there. But we really bet on the product. And so yeah. I think that was, customers are smart. You can't trick them. And that community, once you get a good product in someone's hands that's solving a problem that meets the needs of their family, people are going to talk.
I'm really interested though. You literally turned a page. You said, you got the ambition, the hard work. You came home one day, you said, "Kids, something about kids." And then you just turned the next page. You said, "And we launched this product." Yeah. Now, we know from the outside in, you know, from the inside out, there's a lot more grunt, heartache, pain, etc., that goes on there. I'm intrigued because you haven't really gone into that yet, but I'm intrigued on the kind of how.
Yeah, we had some mentors.
How did you do that? There's Procter & Gamble. There's all sorts of big boys out there. How did you do that?
Well, I love that you put us positioned up against Procter & Gamble.
Procter & Gamble.
Hopefully,
no one's
one
ever
day.
Said that before.
Well, of course.
Hopefully, one day we're battling for the same kind of market share that they are.
You never know.
So we knew that we thought, you know, this is going to be hard. It'll probably take a few months. So like a year and a half later,
this is after I'd spent a significant amount of time in the industry working with a lot of brands, helping them develop products.
Yeah.
So I kind of knew the process of how to source things, where to go. It wasn't a quick turnaround because we didn't want to do some cheap white label product. Like we really wanted to develop something that we were confident about it. And honestly, I'm still not addressing your question right away. I'll tell you what, it was scary when we launched our first product. We didn't launch with a suite of products. We literally launched a single product.
Yeah.
We didn't have a lot of money. So we invested.
We had no money. You know,
we had no money.
I was like, what
we
money?
Launched our hair and body wash. And talk about being bold and brave. Andrea stuck her neck out there because I was holding down my day job to keep things operating in our household. And Andrea sticks her neck out there and starts repping this product. That was a scary step into the darkness.
Hold on. Surely in the US, from my knowledge, there's equivalent of UK, I think it's FDA there, of testing et cetera. So you're missing, you know, for me, you're missing this chasm of synergy and effort to get that done.
Right.
Yeah, there are major companies out there with, you know, hundreds of departments, and... I'm intrigued.
Because of Brian's experience, we partnered up with a formulator, and people often ask me about manufacturing, and they're like, "Well, how did you find the right manufacturer?" And manufacturers don't often take chances on people like us because it's a huge waste of time for them. So I think the best thing for anyone wanting to manufacture a product is just Google manufacturers and get on the phones with them and burn all the bridges with those people you've Googled. Ask them questions. What would I need to know? What kind of, you know, like, you don't know what you don't know. And so you're going to have to be prepared to go to the manufacturer when it is the right person and say, hey, I want this type of product. I'm going to put this much money down. Here are the ingredients I know I want. If it's a piece of clothing you want manufactured, here's my pattern that I've had created with a pattern maker. And here's my example of my fabric that I want made. None of those things were things that you know when you start the process. And so it takes hours and hours of Googling, research, talking to other people who've manufactured, I think kind of helps, but none of that can be replaced for your own work that you're doing. So every day when Brian would go to work and I'm like pregnant, like when I'm pregnant, I'm like an Oompa Loompa. Like I'm a large, large woman. So I'm just sitting on the couch with a toddler, just Googling and calling these manufacturers and putting the work in until eventually we found one who believed in us. We still work with them today. And then when we developed that product, to answer your question, Simon, we took it to get pediatrician and dermatologist tested. Again,
the RIPT testing. And
Yeah, that just required.
Once again, that was such a significant investment and so scary, not knowing what the return was going to be, right?
Yeah. And that just required hours of Googling. Brian would say, hey, I think I've heard of these testing facilities, like call them, you know, and getting the pricing and then figuring out, you know, were they reputable, getting the references and all of those things. But all of that was a lot of work. But I'd say where the emotional fear came in is what Brian was talking about. And then you're ready to put that out into the marketplace. And we had no money at that point. All we had was 750 bottles of soap on a pallet in our garage, right? And so at that time, social media mommy blogging had really taken off. We had seen a few friends who had started direct-to-consumer companies selling more like clothing type things. A friend who started Freshly Picked and she sold moccasins and has been on Shark Tank and millions of dollars of moccasins. A best friend of ours that started a company called Solly Baby Wraps that lived here in San Diego, Jared and Elle, became our mentors and lifelong best friends. We've known them since college, but you know, they came over and Jared set up the Shopify website with Brian. And Brian was at work every day. And I was kind of waiting for him to sit down and put the Instagram post up with me, you know, and sell the first bottle of product. But he was really worried about, you know, losing his job. Was this a conflict of interest? There was a lot of gray area there. And so one day I remember I was at Elle's house and I was talking to her and I was frustrated and I kind of wanted to put that blame on Brian. I'm like, well, Brian isn't sitting down with me. He's not doing this. And we got to get this out. We have these bottles in our garage and we're not, you know, we got the website, we're not going. And she just looked at me and in the sweetest, most gentle way said, hey, Brian's doing what he knows he needs to do for your family. And he feels like he needs to be at work every day. And you feel like you need to get this out and that you guys need to sell it. All you need to do is worry about what you need to do for your family. And when she said that, it was, again, that fire built up of years of failures, of years of things that didn't pan out like we had was inside of me. And I was like, again, hell yeah, we are doing this. And I started posting on Instagram multiple times a day. We only had one bottle of soap, so I had to think of lots of different ways to talk about it. Featuring the community, I started sending hundreds of bottles to anyone I knew had a social influence and asking them to try it with a handwritten note. There was no questions of like, will you talk about this? Because we couldn't pay them to talk about it. So that seemed really unfair and kind of greasy. But if it was like, hey, if you like this, let me know what you think. You know, like if you don't like it, let me know what you think. There's handwritten notes on a white piece of paper. We didn't even buy any cool inserts or anything like that. Everything was from Uline, just generic packaging. And almost every single person who received it started to talk about it online. They started to post about it on Facebook. They started to post about it on Instagram. The thing about the bathroom is that it is the worst lit room in your home. Nobody wants to show their naked kid, right? Is the worst Instagram direct to consumer company to start. Don't start a soap company if you want to sell direct to consumer. The most expensive thing you could ship for the least price point. Like, we have zero business acumen, and that is very clear here. Like, we did not think this through. But people were so excited, and it touched something in them, and that's how it started.
Yeah.
So I want to ask, I mean, you know, a lot of times when people start a business, they'll assess a bunch of different categories, and they'll be really methodical about market research and looking for, you know, what's the competitive set and what are the, you know, doing SWOT analyses and stuff like that, and trying to find gaps in the market, whether it's product oriented gaps or consumer segments that are not particularly well served. And yet it sounds like you've created this incredible business that was really more rooted in your own interests and a problem that you saw, as opposed to, hey, we've done this, you know, full-scale assessment of, you know, bath care products for children, and this is the gap that we saw. Is that fair?
Yeah, Ryan, I think we were a little, we had done very surface level analysis, right? That's not our skill set. We are not the sophisticated analysts by any stretch of the imagination. We did some light research, right? And I did know that through, you know, during recessions, that consumer products targeted towards children generally sell well. Same thing with animals. During recessions, people like to spend time with their animals. During recessions, people like to spend recreating. You know, I knew generally some of those things. Recessions were on my mind, right? We had just, you know, come through that. But we didn't necessarily scout out a really deep dive on all these particulars.
Yeah, and I mean, so I'm laughing because we now have our chief operating officer now is a Harvard MBA. And then our, you know, we have an analyst on his team that went to Stanford and Chicago School of Business. And they'll come to us with, analysis of things. And I'll be like, I think those numbers are great. And without them, we couldn't be where we are, and we need them. There's 100%. But then I'll say, but I feel like this is what we should actually do. And I think they probably hate me for saying stuff like that as much as I do. But it's how I really feel, that there's something that, and my gut is not always right. I'll give you an example. So at one point I decided everyone needed a Tubby Todd Mama t-shirt, and Michael and Simon, we're going to send you guys Tubby Todd Dad t-shirts, but we'll send you a mama shirt too, because being a Tubby Todd Mama is more than just someone who is a young mom who has babies in their home. Being a Tubby Todd Mama is someone who cares for little ones and cares for the well-being of children. It's a broader definition, right? A mama is a definition that we've expanded and brought this entire generation into, as we care for the future and we care the products we use on them. We're modern caretakers who are instilling love and equality in our children, right? And so we decided we were going to create these Tubby Todd Mama shirts. And so sometimes when Brian was at work, I would do things that he didn't know about. Like, I'd say, you don't have to place you can get a free Tubby Todd Mama shirt, but you don't have to order anything, right? And everyone was mad at me because we ordered these shirts at like $7 or $8 a shirt. Like, first off, I didn't find a cheap price for the shirt, but I had tried on 20 shirts. And I wanted this shirt to be the most comfortable, flattering shirt, not tight on your arms, make your arms look fat. No mom needs that. No mom needs arm fat, right, guys? And I was like, this is the shirt. It's a little bit more expensive. It's organic, US made. This is our shirt. And we got the shirts. And then Brian was like, okay, we have to have a price, you know, minimum price for purchase. And the analyst team is still telling me that. We still do this mama t-shirt promotion. And I'm like, but what if people could just get a shirt? They didn't have to buy anything. Do you know what would happen? They'd go to our website and they'd order a ton of stuff because they were on our website. And if they don't order on our website now, they're going to be on our site. They're going to get used to being there, right? That means that they're going to be going back to our site. Like, you go to a site a few times before you order. That just makes sense. That's how every purchase history you've ever had is. You don't typically buy them the first time on the site, right? So these are all things that can't be proven necessarily, especially with not having any ability to create a Google spreadsheet. I couldn't prove any of these things, right? So when we launched those Mama Tees, the free gift with purchase with zero minimum order, and we had one of our best sales days ever, were our margins what they needed to be? Brian would argue no, but that's the one who keeps the bills paid. But I think it has to be that yin and yang of going with your gut on thinking about your consumer and like, who is your consumer? How do they shop? And what does it feel like? And what would they want? And then also bringing this analytics into it.
Well, that's an incredible balance then from what you've just described. And you've told us a little bit more about yourself, Andrea, which is, you know, you have the entrepreneurship. Yeah. And that's something that you have to bring to a business to be successful. And I'm guessing, you know, you talked about sending out samples, and we'll come on to the social media scene shortly, but that sampling, you know, success of any product or brand is if the person comes back and buys again. And I'm guessing that's the hook for you here, is that all that emotional connection with the Mama shirt, with sending out your samples to influencers in that kind of plain but you know, a symbolic gesture, you know, here's some stuff, please go and try. There's no question whether you may come back with a like or dislike. We just want the feedback. Yeah.
I mean, Brian, you want to talk a little bit about influencer marketing?
Yeah, we spend a lot of time creating these as authentic relationships as we possibly can with hundreds of influencers. We've spent time on creating platforms that we can really make sure that we're keeping tabs and following through on promises that we're making with these influencers. A lot of them are friends that we stay in touch with. And there's you know, that entrepreneurship that you talk about, I think that's just, that's optimism, right? Like, I'm probably a little bit more pessimistic than Andrea. And I think this is one of her real strengths that she brings to the table, is that eternal optimism to want to give away free shirts that you genuinely believe in the honesty of your customer and their good intentions. And we try to do that through our customer service. We try to just give everybody the benefit of the doubt. We try to be the discount tire and mentality that if you don't like your product, come throw it through our window, return it. We'll deal with you honestly. We're gonna, we have our worry-free guarantee, right? And all these little things are laying the foundation of a community, of a virtual relationship. And we have customers that have come back 20, 30 times and repurchased from us. And some that send Christmas cards and we send personal cards to them. It's cool. It's really fun.
So talk about that a little bit. I mean, community is a big part of, you know, of what you've done. And I would venture to guess that many people that start a brand or start a business think community is good. And yet you've created something that's enormous. Where did the two of you get that sense of, you know, of the importance of community? And then how do you feel like you've built it?
Yeah, I think that Brian, always is reminding from a sales perspective, we need to talk about the features and the benefits of the product. You know, that's natural when you're selling a product, but we need to talk to our consumers like they're our friends. And because they are, we're legitimately selling this product to our peer group, first off. And second, what more can you ask from a brand than to create something that they actually want in their own home? And it sounds so much easier than done, especially as we're growing. I'm seeing that challenges, the challenges of creating products and product experiences that that we actually want in our own home, right? That creating content that we actually want to read and emails we actually want to open and videos that we actually want to watch, right? I think that, like Brian said, we were lucky. We built our business on influencers. And I consider an influencer to be anyone who has social influence, whether it's online or in their community in person. We gift typically to women or men who have a social following or an in-person following of around 1,000 people. If they reach out to us asking for free product and it is less than that, we will always send them something. And one thing that Brian and our operations team have been very diligent about is keeping track of these influencers. Who are they? And how do we build those relationships? So how it started was just sending product to them. So we would say, hey, we think your family's cute. Here's some product. Like I said, we couldn't pay them. And we didn't do any paid ads on social media for the first 3 years. And we didn't pay influencers in any way for about 4.5 years. So then we built a list of, you know, a few thousand contacts who, like Brian said, became friends. Personal friends that at the end of the year we would send Christmas cards to. One of them just bought the house next door, a girl we've worked with, and now our kids play together. These women, mainly to me, are the ultimate entrepreneurs. They are freaking geniuses who have created businesses from home with zero business experience, are selling products, millions of dollars of products, from their smartphones, right? Just by sharing how they truly feel about the products they're using and the services they're using in their own home. Those are people that I want to work with. And the ones that are more authentic to themselves and what they believe, those are the ones that do the best. And we have a few nurses that we work with, and they have just a few products that they really believe in, right? Because they're nurses, they're very conscious of what they're putting on their children and in their homes. And, you know, they talk really honestly to their followers. They'll sell, you know, one sold, I think it was 800 orders directly. We could directly trace back to her through her link, which means, I mean, and that was over this weekend, right? So yeah, these women are geniuses, and we have created multiple programs now within Tubby Todd to support them, and they are supporting us. So that was the foundation of our community, was tapping into this swell of the influencer community, tapping into that, and then them building us while we built them.
I think that, like, everybody only has so many hours in the day. We all only have so much bandwidth. And this has been important to us and our company to spend the time on these things. And so from a very, very early stage, we were trying to set ourselves up for success, that we could spend our hours working on these things rather than on working in the company. You know, we wanted to work on the company. So really early on, we saw that, you know, Andrea was at home boxing orders, doing things like this. And we realized this isn't building the community. This isn't building the brand, us packaging orders. We need to shift this away. And we were trying to clear the plate so that we could keep this a priority of building the community. And I think this is one of the reasons why we weren't making any money, pulling any money out of the company for so long, is because all of these things that were distracting us and from focusing on these top priority things, we'd hire somebody, we'd push the side, focus on the community, focus on building that.
You launched one product, you've launched more. How do you get with the, and you talked about the entrepreneurship, the hard work, how did you get to kind of base two in terms of, right, this is going well and let's start developing more things?
Yeah, our communities told us what they want. So that's been really helpful.
They're not quiet.
They wanted lotion. We went to work on creating a lotion. They wanted a bubble bath. We went to work on creating a bubble bath. Our partnerships that we created with our formulators, and they got excited and were honestly just as excited and just as on board about seeing Tubby Todd grow and be successful as we were. They believed in what we were doing. They saw the excitement of the community that was following us, and they would bring us products. Wow. They were up at night thinking about, hey, this is a great idea. This is a cool new formula, a new preservative system that we want to try, and we would work, develop, test, prove them out. And how cool is that? That you've got all sides working for you. Like, that's multiplication at its finest.
Yeah,
I love that. Hey, so tell us, I mean, tell us about the most important community. You know, the two of you are married. How do you make this work? And, you know, not to get too personal, but I think it is one of those things where, you know, there's some risk of starting a business together and that kind of thing. How do y'all make it work?
Mike, I can't tell you how many people say, I could never work with my husband. Like, people say that to me all the time. Probably daily, a woman will say that to me. And I'll say, hey, you know what? I have always fought with my husband, and now we just fight about making money. So I would rather, which allows me to feel like we're fighting for a higher power. No, I mean, when we were first married, we fought about where you hung the towels and things like that. And then it was fighting about who got up with the baby in the middle of the night, or how we got up. He always got up with the baby, but maybe he didn't put her back to sleep like I wanted him to. But now it's, how are we going to build our board out, and what is the best, you know, am I allowed to give all these mama teas away for free? And the answer is, I just do it when he's not home. But I really believe that Brian and I, it has not always been easy. Obviously, it's not easy to be in a partnership in business with anyone, right? It's not easy. And you think, oh, well, now that things are going, it's easier. No, it's way harder. The stress, not only do we provide for our family, we provide for 15 other families, right? And that responsibility, you don't carry that lightly. And we have, you know, our employees and team members looking at us when we're bugged at each other now. And also four kids who can tell when we're bugged at each other.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we've been really lucky to have the same end goals. And we were very clear up front from the first date that our end goals were to provide in a creative, out of the box way for our family. We also both believe strongly in God and have the same conviction religiously. And that's a foundation. We have different ways of accomplishing things and different work styles, but that's okay. Those are just details. We're learning how to offer grace to ourselves and to one another in those details, right? Because the foundation is there. And so I've just been really lucky to have found someone with that same foundation, and then that he hasn't strayed from that. You know, he hasn't strayed from that foundation, because I think that that's where the challenge comes in.
I don't know if striving for an easy life is the goal. right? Yeah. There's no progression in easy. And, you know, we've definitely maybe thrown ourselves into the fire in terms of like challenging our relationship.
Like but working with your father-in-law and your wife. I mean, that could be an example of that. It's a relaxing work environment that Brian has thrown himself into.
But at the end of the day, you know, metal is forged in fire and it creates strong bonds. And we've really walked away, I think, stronger as a couple. You know, I look to my father-in-law as a friend, as an example. He hasn't been easy, but it's definitely been worth it. So, but yeah, I don't think easy should be the goal.
Yeah. I really embrace your openness and your honesty here. And I think that's a part of the thing that makes it work. Have you talked about where you take, well, I'm sure you've talked about where you take it. Are you aligned on where you take it and where you see the vision?
That's a great question. We aren't entirely sure.
I mean, we are aligned in the vision in that we're both just trying to run as fast as we can to keep up with the vision, right? And then we're just trying to build it out, find time to build it out, I think.
It's just fun. It's fun to think about that vision. And we're constantly talking about it. Yeah. We're constantly working on it and shaping it and testing the vision, right? And that is what makes this also fun. And that's what entrepreneurs are just addicted to, is testing the vision, going for it, building that vision. And so, yeah, that's what makes it all spicy and fun and worthwhile.
So can I push you on this then? So,
yeah, please do.
So a vision, and Mike and I like this analogy, is not necessarily what you write down, it's what you see.
Yeah.
By definition. So what do you see then in 5 years' time? If I walked around the US in the different cities and I see the mamas with their shirts on, what will I see?
Well, I would hope you would see them in London too.
Ah, so now we're getting to the vision. I like
yeah,
it.
There yeah, there you go. Think, come think, on, then. Simon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tubby Todd International. Good. Yeah. I would like to see, I'm going to say this, Brian, and then you can edit my vision. How about that? We would like to see a team that has created the most effective, flawless, seamless ordering process through tubbytod.com directly to your door. An entire suite of products that take care of your family from age newborn to 90. We are currently developing a tween line for those stinky years between like 8 and 9 that are starting younger for kids, up until 15, when there's kind of that intermediate trying to figure out how to take care of your body and also not quite ready for something that you might pick up at Target. I see a large international community, especially primarily made up of women, that believe that taking care of themselves is the best thing they can do for their little ones. I see a team that believes the same thing, and a team that believes firmly that our family is the most important thing, and what we do at home matters, and that will impact what we do in the workspace, and those things should go hand in hand. And maybe we'll have another kid or two, Simon. I don't know. I think that's the part, that last part, is where Brian would disagree with me. So should we talk about that on this podcast together, Brian?
Let's just dig into the details.
Let's dig into how we can barely take care of our four children, but for somehow I want more. Let's dig into that right now.
I think the vision we spent a lot of time talking about what is 2021 going to look like. what are our goals for 2021? We've talked a lot about that as a team. We've talked about our 5-year goals and put those down on paper. One, so that we can physically see those goals and remind ourselves of those goals. And one thing that we keep coming across is readily apparent is how important this community genuinely is to us. At the end of this year, at the end of last year, 2020, we wanted to do something for the community. And we just asked our followers on Instagram to submit a family who needs a year of bath time. And we just wanted to give back. I see in the future, we have really infused this vision and goal of really supporting the family, really providing where we can, right? And so I want to build that into our DNA as much as anything in the next few years as well.
And we had, just to follow up on that, we had over 1,000 families share stories of people that they had seen this year.
Our marketing team ended up reading all these stories and really digging into why this family deserves something that we, our hearts were just bleeding, and we ended up, you know, doubling the donation to all these families that we, so was it 100 families we were going to give to, then we ended up giving to 200 families.
And, yeah. A year of bath time. Yeah. Because, and they had to have me stop reading them because I was going to give them to all like 1200 because it was just, yeah, you know, just beautiful story. So I love that, Brian. Yeah, this ability, this opportunity that has been extended to us to give back. Like in 2021, we'll be able to give, you know, our goal is to give 1% of our top line to in giving back to families in need, you know, through product donations and also through monetary donations. But, you know, as that top line grows, being able to expand that.
So I love, really appreciate your time. And I love this, you know, what you've mixed together, because you've, I think, infused a sense of purpose and community and values into what it is that that you've all done with Tubby Todd. So I'll ask you the question then. So if the world had to, you know, given all of what you've done and what you've learned and who you are, if the world had to listen to you for a few minutes about what you've learned and what you think is important, what would you say?
I'm waiting for Andrew to talk first.
Oh, you want me to go first? I know. We had this thing that I was like, you have to do this one first. We like already talked about this. I'll go first. I think there's a line from a book that I read recently. It's from an Episcopalian preacher, Bishop Michael Curry. He says, let us transcend the places that hold us. And I think our vision for ourselves, our marriages, our partnerships, our children, our work lives, our physical lives, you know, everything we do in our lives, a lot of times we have these things that hold us. And most of the time, if we really dig into it, it's our own vision of what it can and what it should look like. It's not anyone else. It's our own selves that is telling ourselves that we can't be or become or act in a way that we might dream of being or becoming or acting. And what this experience of being married, working with Brian, working with my dad, has taught me is that God has a bigger vision for me than anything that I could have dreamt of, and that I still have such a long way to go to understand what I am capable of and what our partnership can become here and what our children can become and what our home can feel like and what our team can feel like. And so if I had to impart words with people, it would be find those places that hold you and look for ways to transcend them. And the first step is just identifying what are those places. And then the next step is asking for help on, I heard recently from a talk, what should I keep doing and what should I do more of and what should I stop doing? And I think if we really ask, whether it's God or the universe, those questions, and then we're quiet, we'll hear answers.
I should have gone first.
Shut up. He's just really nice.
So as I mentioned, I'm in Utah right now. Last night or yesterday I was in San Diego, and I came up here to visit my parents. And so in the car ride, I decided to download Matthew McConaughey's book, Green Lights. Have you guys read that by chance?
I've read it, but I've heard of it.
It's fun. It's really fun. It's worth a listen. I'm not all the way through it yet, but it's good. And so it got me thinking, it's his memoir of sorts. And so anyhow, it got me thinking, you know, what has life taught me? And so I jumped into my journal on my iPhone. I just keep one tab for notes, and I just kind of write down little thoughts and impressions. Matthew McConaughey calls him the bumper stickers and prescriptions in life. Those life lessons, right? And it turns out over the last year or so, I've actually spent a lot of time just thinking about like the laws of nature. And like the sun comes up by clockwork, the moon revolves around the earth. There's these forces in nature that just are perfectly obedient, like water. There's oxygen and hydrogen that are all being perfectly held together by these covalent bonds. Just if these bonds didn't perfectly work, life as we know would just wouldn't work. Observing these laws of nature, thinking about seeds is probably where I'd spend the 5 minutes. The optimism around planting a seed is just the coolest thing. You plant a seed, you tend to the seed, you make sure that it's nurtured and it's healthy. And what happens with that seed? That apple seed turns into a tree that just multiplies. It's a law of nature that when you plant a seed, it multiplies. It doesn't matter what seed it is. Apple seeds, grains, potatoes, all of these things multiply when you put in the time and effort. And that beauty of optimism is kind of what I've been trying to chew on. I think we chew on the things that we're not necessarily inherently good at. And so I keep coming back to this thought of being optimistic and how it's truly an eternal principle. It's a law of nature that, and so one of the things that I've tried to do is spend more time in prayer, because what is more opportunistic or, you know, than prayer, like really hoping and believing and having faith that that time that you spend on things on your knees will turn into to more and your efforts will be multiplied. So that's kind of where I've been spending my time. I think that's I try to build out maybe a more eloquent and beautiful way of kind of skirting around that idea. But that's where I spend my 5 minutes.
Gosh, no pressure, Mike. Yeah. No pressure, Mike.
Well, you know, this has been fascinating. And, you know, I think even just in these last two comments that, that y'all have made, you know, I think a real reflection of, you know, of your life experience. And Simon, I greatly appreciate your willingness to share the story about Tubby Todd, but also the fact that, you know, the humans behind this. And one of the things I've felt like has been, you know, maybe a little bit of short supply in the world in recent times is that sense of compassion and humanity. And I think what you've shown is that behind this great business are two great people, more than that, actually more great people that, you know, have created it. And I genuinely love what you bring, you know, to the world. And I'm so excited to, you know, to know you. And also I'll be excited to cheer you on from afar as this thing continues to grow. So thank you for sharing.
Thank you. Thank you so Absolutely. Much for having us. This was so fun. Thank both of you.
Well, I'd like to thank you too. And I kind of likened you to being your own authors on a book here. And I know I kind of skipped back a page or two when I asked you about how you got to to certain chapters, but I'm certainly intrigued and interested in your, in the next chapters with you, and they are watching you grow. You might have an international chapter in there, I'm sure. But yeah, no, I'm truly intrigued, and I'm 100% supportive and behind you. And separately, you know, Mike knows me well. If you want any thought or insight, if and when you do consider other Europe's or beyond, I'd be delighted just to have a chat with you at any point.
Oh, that's awesome.
Thank you. We'd love to pick your brain
on that.
We do hope you enjoyed this podcast, and thanks for listening to What I Wish I Knew with Mike Irwin and Simon Dorr. Please join us at whatiwishiknewshow.com. You can subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Please share What I Wish I Knew with Mike Irwin and Simon Dorr with your friends. We welcome your feedback and recommendations of new podcast guests and ideas on topics. If you have business challenges, we're also available for advisory and consulting roles. We'd be delighted to listen and help. Just send us an email. Our address is hello@whatiwishiknewshow.com.